My name's Elijah, and welcome to the Roots Hospitality Podcast.
Yes, chef! Yes.
Welcome to episode 62 with Jamie Henshaw.
Very good. Well, we were just discussing, weren't we? It was, I think you're up to episode 20 when we met.
Yeah, it's pretty funny because I asked you to get involved in a podcast project initially. That's how this started. And then you kind of thought about it, mulled over it, and then found a way to kind of bring me on to work with you to kind of benefit the both of us in our way. And then we met at room 10 the same day I was doing the chat with Big Sam Young. And
that's
we just
right.
got to talking shit.
That's exactly right. I think, we just met and we were talking about how we could integrate you into Sydney Direct Fresh Produce and share your stories. I loved what you were doing because it actually reminded me a lot of what I was doing early days of T&M, which was running around with a camera filming lots and lots of chefs. And just the amount of work that goes into that, I really appreciated what you were doing. So I thought, let's get this guy on the map a bit more, you know? And I was killing two birds with one stone. You were helping me as well. So I want to say thank you for that. And you're still going strong.
2 years on. It's pretty crazy to think
that. It goes quick.
It's crazy. When I was thinking about us sitting down today and I was like, shit, just remembering the first time we met and how quick that's gone.
It's gone so fast.
It's crazy.
So fast.
It's gone smoking. I like it. It's just, it's really funny reflecting on that and then all the other shit in between that's kind of gotten us here. And when I sat down to think about your journey and how you started, like obviously we've only known each other for 2 years, but in terms of you getting started in all this is crazy. And I think it's important to, I guess it's more important to start with this because this is kind of the motivation probably behind you wanting to share stories was the important story of your own with finding Ali. And and you wanting to kind of, I think it was the birth of, you found out the news of Esme being coming along. And
you've done your homework.
Ah, mate. But yeah, and it was just that news of you coming and finding that out of having a new part of the family that wanted you to kind of close maybe a chapter in your own family and find those answers to the questions that you had. So if we can go through that, if you want to share that just to start.
Yeah,
but what I would like you to do in sharing that is instead of sharing the story of someone going through it, is maybe share that story of someone now looking back on it and the lessons that you've learnt from that. And then we can kind of go from there.
No, that sounds good. Sounds good. So just to give people a bit of context as well who don't know me or if you do follow me, I was a chef from the age of 15. Walked into my first kitchen, the Rose and Crown. And then before I know it, I was running a kitchen by the age of 18 and then moved over to a company called... back in the day, Est, which is an Italian restaurant. And then Australia came along later down the track. I was 26 and me and the missus wanted to go traveling and we actually ended up in Sydney. I remember Googling Sydney and going top 10 restaurants and they all came up, the usual suspect, and Icebergs popped up and I thought, oh, I'm going to apply for that. And I got the job. I got the job as trainee sous chef. So very, very early days, you know. And what a learning curve. I actually can't remember the head chef name at the time, but he was pretty hardcore, man. And then I saw an ad in the paper for like catering company, which is called Spotless. And then I basically applied for it and I got the job. And I ended up working randomly enough at a company called QBE Insurance. And I was like, fuck, I'm starting work at 6 a.m. in the morning. I'm done by 2:30 because I'm in like proper chef mode, like restaurant mode. And I had to cook for, I think it was about 260 people a day. And it was just literally like breakfast, lunch, and a little bit of afternoon tea. And that was it. And then one day, they had a board meeting and I had to do a fillet steak with, and it was pepper sauce, old school. The CEO, who's an Irish guy called Frank, goes, yep, let's sponsor this chef. Everyone loves the food in the building. So, you know, the power of food got me my sponsorship in Australia, which I'm really grateful for. And then my final, I suppose, resting place as a chef was the Reserve Bank of Australia. Yeah, so I got, you know, I was thinking I was 20, would have been 20, I don't know, 27, 28, I don't know, around that age. I can't remember the exact, but I got the executive head chef of the Reserve Bank, and I actually couldn't believe it, you know, like it's like the Bank of England. And there's three floors there, three kitchens. I think it was like 40 members of staff, and I had to look after the whole thing. So that was, I suppose, you know, the pinnacle. It wasn't, you know, a beautiful two-hatted restaurant, but the way I treated it was exactly like that. Yeah. And I always took a lot of pride in cooking food and what I did. And then I remember one day I'm looking out of the boardroom. It was just like, okay, there's something niggling at the back of my brain. At the time, I didn't realize what it was, but what I do know now, it was abandonment. I was suffering big time with it, and I didn't realize, but the kitchens had, in some format, had helped me avoid it because, you know, you're in fucking non-stop mode, you know? You're always finding something to cook, clean, prep, shout at, do, you know? Make someone else happy, cook more food. But when I suppose I came up for air, it was that point when I was like, fuck, like I'm really hurting inside and I really need to go and sort this shit out. And that's when I threw the towel in, being a chef. And that was it. I was like, fuck, I'm going to go and find my dad, literally. Being a big lover of like Anthony Bourdain and a lot of the cooking shows and things like that and documentary making, never picked up a fucking camera in my life. I was like, right, I'm going to make a documentary. Saved a little bit of money from my chefing days. Booked a flight, literally, to Dhaka. And then I think I was out 10 days later after doing that. I suppose over the course of 3 years, I was going back and forth to Bangladesh to discover my roots, my heritage. And it was an amazing thing. I fucking look back at it now, and it still today blows my mind that I did it. And I don't think I've really sat down to acknowledge it because I've been nonstop since I got back. And I don't want to ruin the story because I'd love people from this podcast to actually go and check it out. But the best thing of all was I created a beautiful piece of artwork, which is a documentary that I'm very proud of. And that brings us to the current day, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it was important to cover that because that's a pretty important part of how most things started for you and the drive, the motivation, the questions, the future of it. So it's important to kind of do that. But what I wondered was, because you got into kitchen so early, and I don't know, maybe whether you had this in the back of your mind, but did you ever stop and think that is quite a coincidence that you also happened to go into the same field that your father was also in, but maybe without even realizing it?
The fucking wonderful world of DNA and your parents, man, it's crazy. So my mum told me a lot of stories about him, and he was such a hustler, like, and I take my hat off to him because he came over to Manchester as the second eldest of 13 children. And I found this all out, obviously, because of the deep dive in my documentary. And these are all the questions that have brought me so much peace, you know? If I didn't know this, I think I'd probably still be in a kitchen, busting my arse, like, going crazy. Not that that's a bad thing, but I'd just be hiding from the facts of life, you know? And he owned a restaurant, like an Indian restaurant in Manchester. So it's always been in my DNA, you know, and even when I did find family members, they told me about that and whatnot. So it's part of my DNA, you know, chefy through and through, I suppose. And it's quite incredible. I even found the village that my dad grew up in as well. Then I saw the stove that my dad cooked on as a kid, you know,
Oh, wow.
The bed he was in. So it was definitely it was just an unbelievable experience when I look back, you know. And you know, you talk about food and I've worked with a lot of chefs to date, and I'll get into that a bit more in a minute, but just going back to where you see your dad and where he's cooked from and if he's in that industry, like, it's a pretty amazing spiritual, I suppose, experience. So also that brought me a lot of peace, you know, to like cook a fucking egg on the stove that my dad did, which was just a little like burner in the floor in this village. It was a fascinating process, all of it. And then, yeah, like you say, realizing that there was that DNA in me with food, that natural ability to match flavors, and you know, it's just
expression.
It's wild, you know. Yeah. Love cooking, love it. Love
it's
it.
Crazy. No, it's because I think about that a lot as well. Just because when it comes to cooking and farming and all that, like, my mum was a cook before I was born and did that, but I didn't really realize. Like, I grew up with her being like bouncers at clubs and hospitals and shit. So, but then my dad studied agriculture, but these were things they didn't really kind of teach me or influence me to do. It just kind of happened, but maybe just in the things that they were interested in. That, yeah. that not that they would intentionally share with you, but because you kind of grew up with that knowledge and it just somehow draws you there and you find peace
part
and,
of your DNA.
And happiness. Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, it's 100%. Really cool.
And it's like my mum, she draws and things like that. So, you know, I just, that's creative. Why I went to art school. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, in a crazy kind of way, you know, I've definitely taken a bit of my mum and a bit of my dad and made it my own, I suppose.
It's cool when you reflect on that.
Yeah, it is mad. I remember my mum drawing on the walls when we'd move houses and stuff, and she'd like draw some sort of like, you know, cartoony memorial on the wall, you know, and I just always remember that. So yeah, just even sitting here looking at that connection between my dad and my mum and what it's generated in me, you know. And now I've got three little sprogs and me and Laura generating versions of us.
Yeah, you'll be drawing walls, drawing bloody pictures on the wall soon yourself.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's dive into the early part of the chef career, because what I think is really important with this is that when it comes to going into hospitality, especially as a chef, is that you can go either two ways. You can be in it and just in the drive for 10, 15 years, however long, or you experience it and then choose to go, maybe this isn't for me, because it gets very... It's very upfront, you know, there's no bullshit to kitchens. And so what's interesting is to talk about your experiences, because obviously early on when you were under Paul Portland and all these people that maybe were mentors for you going forward, they must have created an environment for you that actually felt positive and felt creative, or in a sense that was some sort of camaraderie that made you want to continue that. So maybe reflecting on that, and maybe him being a mentor, any kind of memories that stuck with you?
I got so much banter. Like, you know, the kitchens I worked in, it was so much fun, very lucky. And you know, the ones that stand out, I've got an example, like Simon Rushton, Paul Partland and Trouter. So these three chefs, and like Paul was the, I suppose, the exec, the honcho, still knocking about, he sends me messages every now and again. Simon Rushton, super talented chef, like just steady Eddie, knows his stuff. And then he had Trout, who's below them too. So like them three were big mentors for me, especially Gusto, Est. And then I was sort of below them in the ranks, and then I ended up running the show with, I suppose, Trouter, and he went on to still chef into another job, and then I sort of slipped into his role, you know. And I suppose when I think about my early chefing days, them three really stick out to me. Oh, and there's one more, which was the Kitchen Hand Grover, who's an absolute legend, still kitchen handing at the same venue I think today.
Wow.
And all my mates banter and send, like, he cycles a bike and stuff around town in Knutsford, the town I used to work in. And just unbelievable. But yeah, but them three really stand out. So I suppose my start of my journey was very positive, you know. And I suppose, you know, when I look back and reflect, like, I didn't have a dad, so, you know, having that structure, that discipline, and it was that sort of old schooly chef, you know, like really hard working, there was no breaks, just crack on with it, AFDs as we called them, like all the way through. And I loved it, you know. So, you know, from an early age, I was really thrown in the deep end on it. And I literally started from the bottom up, washing pots, you know, to running them restaurants, which still today is still operating, like Gusto in Knutsford. Like, it's an institute. You go for your nice Italian cocktails and your nice pasta and pizza. So that's nice to reflect on. So, yeah, no, a really positive start, really.
Yeah. I know you had plans for a cookbook on the way as well.
Yeah, no, so I did. So one of the things when I left the kitchen was I thought that I'd become a celebrity chef.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was another one of the brain farts. And then, you know, obviously doing the documentary made me realise how much I love the art of storytelling. And that sort of slowly fell on deaf ears doing the cooking show and all that. But I did my own YouTube channel, all that, when YouTube and Instagram was really kicking off, I suppose. And that's where a lot of my original ideas came from. And it was funny because where I'm at today, obviously the owner of a creative media agency, that drive to, I suppose, become a celebrity chef, it put me in a position where I was doing a cooking demo for Keekerman, Australia, soy sauce. And I remember meeting a guy called Tony Mann there, who's the owner of Export Fresh, absolute legend, London geezer, big cuddly bear, love him to bits. And he came up to me and went, "Oh, mate, I love your presentation, the way you presented, your vibe, your, you know, everything about you." And I was like, "I'd love for you to be like a rep for my business." And I go, "What, like rep as in salad leaves?" And he's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Mate, I'm not being a washed up fucking rep, you know, it's not happening." And then I thought about it for a while, and I went away, and at this point I'd left the RBA. And I was Uber driving when Uber driving was a thing, and the tax man was trying to work out how you tax Uber drivers. So I was cleaning quite a bit of money. And it was great. I was doing Uber, a little bit of chefing with a few agencies like Nosh and whatnot, a Randwick race course and all that. And I was working on my profile, TNM, yeah, right. The Northern Monkey, right? Which comes from a nickname in the kitchens. And then I was thinking, you know what? It's not a bad opportunity. Like, I knew his product, which was Petit Bouche, which a lot of chefs will know. It means small mouth in French, all the baby veggies, the micro herbs. And I was like, I had a bit of a thought one day, doing this Uber driving, not having this responsibility of the RB anymore. And I just had these ideas. And I was like, what if, like, I went in and started doing social media around this brand, this product? And literally that's what the idea came to mind, because obviously I had this conversation, we're doing a cooking demo, and I went away, I'm driving the car, and I'm like, fuck, this is a thing, like, I'll give it a go. So I literally go into the Sydney markets, like, rocked up one morning, because I knew it from getting produce there and stuff and going in as a chef, and I was like, oh, Tony, how you doing? He remembered me, and I was like, look, I've had this idea, you know, like, marketing your stuff, and I didn't even know what fucking marketing was. I've not even got the degree.
Just
you know?
Keywords.
Just putting top blagger on, you know. And then I go in, and then he's like, mate, if you're gonna market my stuff and I'm gonna pay you, you've got to work on the fucking markets. Literally, that's what he said to me. I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And then I literally, like, a few weeks later, I was still Uber driving, and like, I'm rocking up at the markets at 11 p.m. at night to do my first shift. And I'm like, I'm pretty excited actually, because I thought something different. The markets is a buzz. And then 1 week turned into one, two, a month, 2 months, 3 months. And I think what happens, because you're working nights, you turn into a zombie. I was literally a fucking zombie. I was working night after night. And Laura reflects at that moment, was like, what happened to you when you worked into the markets? You went into some sort of vortex, you know? And my hat's off to everyone who works in the markets, because fuck, it's hard work, man. It really is. Like, the hours and the intensity, the personalities, everything, it's full on. And that was it. That was my marketing degree, straight up. That was my marketing degree, the experience, you know, and that's what it was. And whilst I was doing that, I literally, you know, come across platforms, and I'd been doing a lot of stuff digitally, like Squarespace and Canva, and working out Adobe and Final Cut and all these little things I was learning, you know, as I went. Cameras, picked up my first Lumix and whatnot. And that was it, and that was literally my first brand.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Before we get there, I do want to close up the chef life before we get into that, because that's the whole new section. That's the beast. But I do want to close it up, because obviously I remember you saying that the RBA was kind of the last chef gig there.
Yeah.
And you spent about 16 years in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, and 16 years is a pretty good go at it, for starters.
Very good stint.
I could jump
in a kitchen now, anyone, and get anyone out of shit. I know I could, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, but it's interesting, because making sure that those 16 years, when you reflect on them, they still have as much value in the mindset that you have today, because it teaches you that hustle, teaches you that go, go, go.
Yeah.
You know, just work with what you've got. There's no kind of excuses there.
Mm.
And all of these kind of lessons that you learn, that determination, that drive for getting things done, do bring you into T&M. So that's why it's important to kind of finish off that chef gear. So what I'm curious to know is, with that psychological shift in terms of that mindset that you had towards now being in a kitchen to now telling other people's stories.
Yeah.
Just kind of gloss over that transition, because that transition point of kind of finding yourself, which you did with Ali, to now starting this, I'm curious just about what you were thinking about, the mental thing, not necessarily the physical, what you did. That's it, if you understand what I'm saying.
Like the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. It's honestly, like, working that long in a kitchen is a very hard program. And that's what it is. It's a program, right? We all get some sort of a program, and it pretty much starts from the early days of life. You know, I think it's a fact, you know, and, you know, for me to go through that process, from my experience, you know, it did take asking for help, you know, and just knowing when was the right time to go, do you know what, enough's enough. And I think that's the biggest thing I see nowadays, is like, people will just try and keep pushing through that. It's not just in chef, it's in many industries. They'll keep pushing through the pain barrier, and you've kind of got to really be able to understand what your thresholds are. And I suppose, you know, I wouldn't say I was lucky. I've always had that drive to want to learn more. And I'll tell you what it comes from. It comes from the fact of, like, coming from nothing. And, you know, I wasn't, on the streets or anything, but like my mum was poor, single mum, so I never really had nice things. So that internal hustle is part of my DNA, you know. So if I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth, I'm sure I'd be very different, you know. I probably might be way more educated because you get the other advantages that come with that. So I suppose I'm the process is a lot deeper than you think, you know, and being able to understand that process is what enables you to empower yourself and then to move on to the next chapter or the next goal, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, so I suppose, you know, what I'm getting at is that, yeah, there is a process in leaving the kitchen and that hospitality mindset. But I think it goes back to what I earlier said, that if you can give yourself the space and find time to, you know, like relax and think about what you want, because it is such a fast paced industry, then you're going to get clues, you know, and that is the art. That is the art. The art is being able to go, right, I'm going to take a breather. You know, do what you want to do, cold shower, cold dip, get in the ocean, whatever, you know, everyone's got different things to do, go for a walk, be in nature. And it's that being able to go, right, I'm going to tap out for a bit now, and then you can start the process, and the process really will come.
I heard that now we're transitioning into the T&M side of things. I did hear that maybe some of the early days of you doing the videography was also part of to help your partner Laura with the speakers lab.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So as I was doing all the chefing stuff back in the day, all the marketing with Petty Bouche, my wife is basically, she trains people to do TED Talk. So I'm not going to lie, like my secret weapon is Laura. Like she's helped me in the art of storytelling, like from being educated in New York, going to theatre school and in York in the UK, a degree in communication. So all of that information, I sort of sat, I'm very good at that. I like to absorb people's energy. If it's shit, then I'll let it go. If it's good, I'll take it and I'll run with it, you know. And you know, you got to give a little bit back as well, you know, and I like to think I do that. So that's been a big secret weapon for T&M, and that was always the goal when we went into doing this. And it is a family business, me, Laura, and obviously the beautiful team we've created. I think there's seven of us now, but like that's a big part of it. She's a speaker trainer, that's it. She trains people to do TED Talks and she's bloody good at it. So that was always the plan with the transition to T&M. And I suppose as we go into that transition now, as we speak about T&M became, you know, the northern monkey, me as a celebrity chef, or trying to be, which I can laugh at, you know, and these videos on YouTube, check it out.
You've still got little man jerk sauce.
Yeah, you can pull that back out. But this is it, like all these things that I've tested and tried as gravitated me to this point now, which is an agency owner. And the goal always in my head was like, okay, I want to build an agency that's doing $1 million turnover, and fuck, I'm sat here and we're doing it. It's fucking incredible, you know, from little old me who came here earning $45,000 a year busting my ass in the kitchen to this, you know. I've done it in what, 14 years, you know, came here with $200, you know, and I'm proud to say that, you know. And I wouldn't usually say something like that, but I am, because it's taken a lot of hard work. You know, the iceberg analogy, everyone sees what's going on at the top, but they don't see the bottom of the iceberg. And there is a lot of tears, a lot of frustrations, but you've just got to keep going. And that's why I'm grateful for the chefing thing as well, because, like, you know, it just makes you so strong.
Yeah,
I always put my mind in that space, even now as an agency owner, and all the amazing clients we work with, you know. And I have a difficult conversation with a client or a project we're on and it's not where it needs to be, then I just transport myself to, you know, being in the kitchen, because it is hard, you know. So it's a lot there to take from that.
It's true. I think about that a lot. I know I went through a stage where I had to really be conscious of my mindset as a chef and being aware of whatever I'm going through, and making sure that you can separate the problems and the issues of what's going on in order to be able to emotionally come in and do your job right. And it's funny, because at some point I was actually thinking about joining like this like positive mindset club or whatever. Maybe, you know, it's called the Conscious Chef Club.
Yeah.
Maybe know about this?
Yeah. Do you know about it? Yeah.
I don't know if you want to tell us more about that.
Fucking hell. Yeah. Fucking open another can of worms there, aren't you? So when I... Oh, fuck me, man. There's so much stuff that's gone on. It's not even funny. The Conscious Chefs Club, which basically sprung from a man camp project I was working on with a bunch of guys that were non-hospo, and I got a phone call from a dear friend of mine, Bruce, saying, oh, we need a chef, we're doing this men's retreat. And that was another big piece of the jigsaw for me with finding Ali. And it was basically a retreat for men in really high-powered corporate jobs. Like, they were paying thousands of dollars to go on this retreat, and I got pulled in at the last minute as the chef to cook, and that was the first one. I think we did about 12 in total, but that was the first one in the early days. And there was meditation, there was breathing, there was, like, you know, the ice bath stuff, the Wim Hof before it all went fucking big time, and it is now, like, when Wim was old school Wim, like, it was all that stuff, you know. And that was a huge, I'm so glad you brought that up, actually. That was a big piece of the jigsaw for me. And it was amazing. It was other men being vulnerable, talking about their shit. And it was fantastic. It really was. And then it transitioned to me taking all that, them learnings from all them experts in their field, and going, you know what, this is needed for the chef industry. And that was a big part of what we did in the early days of T&M. Before, you know, all these clients come on board and you get consumed by it. But I'm very proud to have done that. And we did events at the Old Acre in Camperdown with Gareth, legend of a chef. And and really, you know, that's always been the backbone of T&M as well, the hospitality community. So whenever there's something going on, I always try to, you know, get the team out to do some pictures or myself, you know, give some advice or help out, you know. So, yeah. Conscious Chef Club, it was a thing. Who knows, it might come back again, you know. But as a business owner, it is hard. You've got so many eggs and things to juggle, staff, clients, you know, building them next levels. But hopefully it'll get to a point where I can get back into that.
Yeah I know you talked about Export Fresh probably being, was that was definitely the first client as team.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Also yeah. Another one which I think would be cool to kind of maybe draw the parallel comparison of the growth of yourself and T&M with this particular client, but it would be SDFP, because they're also one of your first clients.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing you think you took over the page maybe when I had like a couple of hundred followers.
Yeah, so
this is like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah,
or something.
That's right. Yeah, so from I suppose give the listeners context, it was like literally Export Fresh, did them for a year, had a really hard conversation over a bottle of gin with Tony. I was like, Tony, I need to do another brand, like, I've got a business plan, da da da. And he's like, no, you're all mine. And then I just shoved some gin down his mouth and he was all right in the end. And that was hard, you know. That another learning, like having to have a conversation with someone and say, look, I want to take this concept and go and do it with another brand, not the same product but something different. And you know, they're the learnings from this journey, and you just get better and better at it. And then, you know, that turned into Sydney Direct Fresh Produce, who's now the, you know, best wholesale provador in the country by far. Luke Kohler, love him to bits, legend, killing it. And I've been a big part of that jigsaw in the sense of digital marketing, branding, content, you know, you name it, anything digital, I've been there. Even supporting Luke with the way he presents, the way he talks on camera. Through myself and my wife Laura, and then we go over to Poultry, CC Chicken, we manage them, amazing Greek family, been with them for fucking many years, all the way through now. And the best way I say T&M now is, I won't go for all the clients, but like the reality is that, like, we are now an agency that markets from soil to plate, literally. Like, we're working with an agronomist right now who's measuring soil types, who's using field tech, that's using all the agronomy expertise he has to create a farming best for farmers, you know, from cotton to pastoral, you with me? And then we go all the way through to even farmers working with Macca's Black Angus, creating a pastoral brand there, you know, and eventually hopefully a beef brand. And then all the way through to the chefs, you know, I'm working with the likes of Tatsuya Wakuda, Mike McInerney, you know, his three cookbooks between them. So it's such a fucking amazing journey to say where we've been from as a team, you know, in the last 5 years, and even my story, which adds weight to T&M. But at this point, like, it is a massive collective. I've got an amazing team, so, so proud of them, part of the family. And that's the way it is now. Like, the future is really bright for T&M. And the fact that we've got that soil to play is a real niche. I don't know any agency that can say that, you know. A lot of them specialize in the the restaurant game, or maybe a bit of wholesale as well. You know, and it's incredible. And now we've just actually this week secured a really exciting project, which is actually in development. Development, you know, it's crazy. But the principles are the same. You know, we go out, we plan with the client, we work out what their 12 months is going to look like, and then we go and create the content with the plan, and then it's all about executing that. So yeah, so it's been a crazy old journey, and here we are today, you know, with an awesome team from Jake, editing, absolute legend, Mikey, graphic design, we've got Ted, Nicole, and Zach, photography, and the CFO, me and the wife, you know. We just taken on a graphic design intern. So, you know, when I tell people that with T&M, like, they go, fuck, you're that big? I'm like, yeah, like, you know, I've been quietly chipping away at the iceberg, and we've arrived. And now the next chapter, I suppose, is just to, it's always for me, it's about customer service. It goes back to hospo days. Customer's not happy, then forget about it, you know? So for me now, the next level for T&M is like refining our systems. How can we become more efficient so we can give more time to our customers to make sure everything's on point from content to their storytelling, you know, and doing bigger, better projects with them. You know, not necessarily that you have to do more content. It's about the quality of it, you know, and that's becoming more and more valuable, I believe. You know, like the fact I've done a documentary, like it took me nearly 4 years to do that, you know. I always had this vision of like being able to do same sort of scenario for some of my clients because their stories are absolutely mind-blowing, you know, where they've come from. And that's really is a part of the journey for T&M, like getting into that space of more documentary making and having our, I suppose, bread and butter clients day to day that need the physical service that we provide, you know. But without chefing and the, I suppose, the efficiencies that drives out of you at that high level of exec chef and head chef and what you work towards, like it can be used in any part of life. And that's where I can say hand on heart, like we're the real deal, you know, literally been there, worn the t-shirt, and now we're representing your brand and we're going to make you look sexy as fuck, you know, whilst telling your story, which empowers the business owner.
Yeah.
And then the business owner can sleep at night and go, fuck, you know, this shit I'm putting out there is real. And it represents me and the product I'm selling.
Who'd have thought this idea all started as while you're Uber driving, huh?
That's it. Create the space, didn't I? Create the fucking space.
Even more so, your first office being the garage as well. Which is crazy, huh?
Yeah, literally like...
How quick it's grown.
Yeah, it's crazy. But again, I could, there was a point where I was managing four brands by myself. This is no word of a lie. You know, I was going crazy. I was working every minute. You know what it's like? You go back, you edit, you rip the content up, wrangle it, whatever. And mate, it was crazy, man, crazy. And I had no experience in this. I was just working out as I went, literally. And it's amazing, like you can't do this without good people and good software and equipment, right? Them three pillars. And there's so many amazing platforms out there. Yes, you've got to have subscriptions and all that, but they're just like your cost of goods in the restaurant, right?
Your
pots and pans, yeah? And that's what you need in this game. And you've got to work out the efficiency of it and then away you go.
Yeah.
You know? But it all comes down, you know, my saying is content is king, story is queen.
There you go.
You know,
I got two questions I want to finish up on.
Go for
They're
it.
They're both going to be reflective, but in very different directions. The first one, I'm curious, just because often when I might look back at my career, there'll be pockets of highlights of memories of me being a chef that just stand out than from the day to day hauling ass. You know, for you, it might just be going to Miami to shoot for an MMA fighter or something like that. But just really strange memories.
Yeah.
You know? But I'm just wondering about if you have any kind of those that are. Maybe you're like, how the fuck did I get here? Like doing this, man, for this person.
I've got so many of them.
If you have any, if you're fired, it's just.
Oh, where do I start? I think, yeah, I've always got to go back to Export Fresh. And a big one was when we did the Petit Bouche Chef of the Month. And I literally filmed, I think it was 45 chefs, you know. Josh Nyland before things went off, you know, I did the first video there and some amazing, amazing chefs and you know, caught them in their prime, their stories and that was a great moment. Like, and what we'd do at the end of the year is we'd round up all the chefs and we'd have a Petit Bouche Chef of the Year event, an award, you know, and they'd come for dinner and I used to organize all that, you know, and it was great. And having all these amazing characters like, you know, Grant King, just awesome chefs, a lot of them. And they'd sit there, and then we did Drake's, we did the Petit-Bouche Farm, and they'd come up and just stood there looking out and going, wow, look at all this talent. Like, this is the who's who of the industry, you know. And I look back at that now and go, wow, that's such a good achievement. Mm. So there's one. You know, you said about the USC fight. You know, this road has been a crazy one, because what we provided T&M, that service, I suppose, and the love and what we put in, like, people have recognized that in other arenas, you know, from UFC. You know, there was a fighter called Isaac Thompson who now lives in the States and is breaking into the UFC, and he will one day because he's a beast. We literally followed him with a camera, and me and Jake created some amazing content there, and he's got that, and we built his brand and his website and all that. You know, through to, I suppose, Tatsuya Wakuda, you know, getting a meeting with him and the team to represent his brand and work with him on Wakuda and 50 Eggs and all the designers that were involved in that, through to now managing Wakugan, which is two Michelin stars. And, you know, David Beckham was there recently with Tets filming. You know, it's crazy. Like, it's just a crazy fucking journey. But always gratitude for it, and never get too big for your boots. You know, always keep yourself grounded. You have to. But I think a big thing is you realize everyone is human, and we're all just trying to do our best. And once you can work that little scenario out and just treat people with the most respect, and if they are being complete, you know, D-I-C-K's, then you just got to work out a way of just how to, you know, kill them with kindness.
Yeah,
that's what my mom always used to say, kill them with kindness, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of standout moments, and the art of story has taken me on a crazy ride, and it just feels like we're only just getting going.
Yeah, doesn't it?
It does. Oh, actually, there's one more I want to add. Like, even last week, we did a cattle sale. We digitally marketed our first cattle sale for Macca's female heifers, the pastoral side of things, and we sold just under $1.5 million worth of cattle, you know. And then the week after, I'm sat with a developer who's seen our work from a gym that we did called Zoo Fitness back in the day.
Really?
Yeah, we did their website, did some videos for them. They got hit bad with COVID, and still amazing relationship with awesome people. And their marketing person from this development agency in Penrith goes in and says, oh, we're looking for an agency to do X, Y, Z. And last week, I'm literally in a meeting with them, and they've accepted our proposal. I'm like, fuck. And now we're going to be working with a huge developer.
How funny.
Can't say much more about it because it's super secret. But incredible.
It's
crazy,
the small one-off things that you do that get picked up somewhere.
But like, that goes back to, like, just do it well. Like, do that one job, do it well.
You never know.
Like, boom, case study, you know?
You never know.
It's like when you were on episode 20, I said, like, just keep going with it.
Yeah.
Do it well. Keep digging deep, you know? And look at you. You've been to Europe. You've done all these amazing chefs. You know,
it's crazy.
Incredible. So
crazy.
It's the same with you. Like, just keep chipping away, and it will all open up.
Yeah.
And hopefully, we might have a little secret project coming up. You know,
wouldn't that be fun? All right. Last question. I finished. You know, you should know this question by now. The same question I ask everyone who comes on the podcast. It's a pretty common question for chefs, and very funny way to look back on it.
Yeah.
And for you, this would be good, because whether it is your maybe time chefing that you still have memories about, or even whether it be at T&M, you could do both. But the funniest or craziest time you found yourself most in the shit. This is how it's going to finish up.
Well, I can give you one in chef and one in agency.
Please, that'd be great. Yeah, let's go.
The one in chef. I'll tell you what the one in chef was. When we used to work at Estes Testing back in the day, I was on the pizza section. And the shitter was down a little sort of like galley pathway to get into the kitchen. And anyone who'd go in when it was proper busy, we're talking like, you know, 80 fucking pizzas coming out of the docket machine. So I'm like bursting, needed a shit, go in there. And what the chefs used to do is you'd heat the paddle up on the stove.
Yeah.
And there'd be that chili oil that's in the thing. And then they'd slide the paddle underneath the door with the chili oil on it, and they'd hold the door tight.
Wow.
So they would just gas you out. Literally, your eyeballs would be coming out of your fucking head. So they did that to me once in the middle of service. And that broke me. That honestly broken. Like, you can you imagine, you're literally dropping the kids off at the pool, and the pizza paddle comes underneath the door, and it's got chili oil on it, and it's smoking you out. Like, it's abuse. It's full-blown abuse, you know what I mean? It broke me. So that was one that I'll never forget, because I just remember getting out of the toilet, and like the dockets and partners like, get the fuck back on your section. And I literally had to put my head under the dishwasher spray thing and just spray, because I was like, it's like I'd been pepper sprayed, you know? So that really stands out. That was the ultimate like punishment, and it was just madness, you know. And then the agency one, fuck, like, when we started, it was like, I suppose, as the agency T&M, like it was me, Jake and Mikey. So I'd go and do these proposals, and I think I went with Jake to one of them. I'm not going to say who it is because I don't want to embarrass myself. But we're like sat there, and I'll never do it again. Like, it's the only one time I did it, and I'm going to be super honest about this. Like, I put a video on screen and I pretended that we did it, you know? Because I'm like, I'm hustling. Like, I need money. Like, we need money. I've got to pay Jake's fucking wage at the end of the month.
And, yeah.
You know, like, it's serious shit when you're a business owner. Like, your main priority is you pay your staff, pay your bills, and you got to pay the tax, man. You know, so I was really in hustle mode. And, and I was, like, completely blagged it. But it felt so bad when I did it. I don't know why I did it. I was just like, I suppose it was that thought of, like, yeah, get these as a client. It'll be amazing. And we never did get them. You know what I mean? So... There was a massive lesson learned from that, and it's like, just don't lie. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
don't
lie.
But you know, that was a pretty embarrassing moment. But I definitely don't do that now. We've got more case studies than you can swing a cat at, which I'm proud of. So we represent, you know.
Well, there you go.
So there you go, mate.
That's a pretty good wrap up of everything, mate. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's great to finally have you on board, huh?
Yeah. No, keep doing what you're doing, mate. It's awesome.
You keep doing what you're doing, all right?
Thank you, mate. Appreciate it.
No, thank you. This has been fun.
Thank you.
The Roots podcast is proudly supported by Sydney Direct Fresh Produce. The fruit and veg supplier led by Luke Kohler has provided Sydney with some of the best in local produce since he was 16 years old and still smashing it today. Thanks for tuning into today's episode. If you'd like to listen to more episodes or check out some cool behind-the-scenes photography, then head to the new website over at rootshospitality.com.au or follow Roots Hospitality on Instagram for the latest updates. Cheers!